This episode of Fuel for the Soul is powered by ASICS. Head over to ASICS.com and sign up for a one ASICS account. It's completely free, and when you sign up, you will receive 10% off your first purchase. You'll also gain access to exclusive colorways on ASICS.com, free standard shipping, special birthday month discounts, and more.
This is Thomas with Believe in the Run.
This is Megan with Believe in the Run.
And this is Megan with Featherstone Nutrition.
And it's on. We're back with, what is this podcast?
Fuel for the Soul.
Fuel for the Soul. I forget because sometimes we do a different one. Okay. Anyway, we're back. Fuel for the Soul. All excited. Hey, we had some feedback on our last podcast. You want to go over that before we go into this one?
Well, here's the thing is we're kind of going to hit some of the topics that people wanted to know about from last week's episode, but we're really going to dive into this new Netflix documentary that just came out. What was it called again?
You Are What You Eat.
You Are What You Eat. And it's a twin study they did. I watched all of it. I was like multitasking, you know, like kind of working at the same time. So I didn't take it all in, but one of the first things that Thomas and I both noticed is, you remember that documentary, What the Health? I think that's what it's called.
Yes.
It has a lot of content.
I felt like it was
content.
A lot of the same content. Like, we've seen these scary things that they put out
like
there.
Like the pig farm was in there. The
We're diving way in here too fast. Okay, so quick overview. This documentary, Megan, what was the point of it and what were they, quote, studying?
So you guys were actually listeners, were the people who were like, hey, Megan, have you listened to this yet? Have you watched it? I was expecting it to be a movie like Game Changers, right? Like a one and done, like hour and a half. And this was like four episodes, which still ended up being about the length of a movie. And it was based on an actual study that was published in the Journal of American Medical Association. So a very reputable journal that looked at 22 sets of twins and, like Thomas said, put one on a vegan diet and one on an omnivore diet and followed them testing all sorts of stuff. So this actual documentary is like pulling from that research study. So when I heard about it, I was like, I'm really interested in watching this. You guys know me. I want to know the results of what happened between these twins when one went vegan and one went on a quote unquote healthier omnivorous diet, right? So that was not what I found in this here documentary. I just felt like what Thomas was saying from the very get-go, it felt like there was just a ton of agendas being thrown into this documentary. And, you know, here I was just thinking like, oh, we're going to talk about people's health. But, you know, as you mentioned, it was like had an animal cruelty spin to it. It talked a lot about climate change. It talked about food safety, right? They were showing what happens with like raw chicken in your kitchen and all this stuff. And then there was a little bit of the overarching like health and wellness piece of it. So for me, it ended up not quite being what I was hoping that it would be. And, you know, to you guys' point, we all looked up the funding and, you know, it was funded by the Vote Foundation, which is a foundation that supports oceanic preservation. And, you know, like you guys said, the Beyond Meat guys and, you know, vegan professors and things like that. So, you know, it certainly is leaning very far in that direction. And it was interesting because I mentioned it in a very small print on one of my stories that I had started, like, I mean, it was like probably like number five font. And I probably had 50 people immediately catch that I had said I was watching it. And I would say 90% of the people were like, I had to turn it off. It was just either boring or offensive. And then I had a very small handful of people that were like, I really enjoyed it. It really opened my eyes. So I don't know if I have a skewed following, you know, but it was really interesting to me to see kind of what other people were thinking about it too.
I was going to say, it's not that I have my own agenda towards animal protein or not animal protein. I think that both diets can work for people and it's a personal preference. And I don't like judge anybody for where their personal preference is. What I didn't like was that I felt like things were exaggerated to prove a point. So like some of the findings I thought were, they wanted to find this, they found this, and that's what they got. And it wasn't, I would say, between the two sets of twins, it wasn't that far off that you're like, oh, wow, if you do this, then you are going to live 10 years longer and healthier and mm-hmm. have a better quality of life. It was just like, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, you guys know we're not here to discuss, you know, the agenda of being an ethical vegan and climate change and all that. We're here to talk like nutrition, right? And what's best for us as runners and those pieces and parts. So I watched the documentary first and then read the research article. So I was actually really shocked at the lack of information in the research study. Like when you looked at the conclusions of the research study, there was like three takeaways. Whereas what they were trying to get you to take away from this documentary was like 25 things. So what that says to me, again, is that the documentary was fairly exaggerated and that there was only a couple things that had statistical significance from a research basis, you know, that we could actually be taking from this study. Now, granted, it was 8 weeks. That's a very short period of time to be showing change. So I understand that's a piece of it. But, you know, talking about like doing things for publicity and doing things for the attention. I mean, I'm trying to remember, what did it flash on the screen as soon as you started watching it? Like, this is for educational purposes. This is not like yeah. science. I was like, okay, well, there you go.
And as soon as you see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I, to defend the documentary a little bit though, I will say I really liked, I think like the first and the last episode were the best because those yeah. were the most like research yeah. based and mm-hmm. here's the facts and this is what we're studying. And I really mm-hmm. liked the like holistic approach that they were taking to it. It wasn't just a, let's see if they lose fat. It was a, let's see mm-hmm. what it does cognitively. Let's see what it does to their microbiome, which is now like the biggest buzzword mm-hmm. in the world. But it was
a diverse microbiome.
It was nice to sort of see that they are looking at like everything and sort of like your life as a whole versus just one little yeah. thing. But then, you know, the middle episodes were kind of like this, it felt more like agenda pushing-ish mm-hmm. style
it
content.
It could have been a half an hour program.
Right, and then you get the results at the end, which, again, I was like half watching this, so take mm-hmm. this with a grain of salt, but it didn't feel like overwhelmingly exciting or interesting. It was kind right. of like everyone kind of had varied results a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I did like the way they measure blood flow. Because, like, that's the only place where blood is flowing in me. Like, seriously? Like, you can't, there's nothing else on your body that you couldn't put a heart rate monitor on someone. Like, what the hell? You got to strap it onto their genitals?
So I was going to say, we need to give context in case people aren't watching this. So they had a bunch of variables they were looking at, and one of them was sexual arousal. So they had guys that, yeah, were like putting things around their genitals at night to, you know, notice blood flow. And then women, they were like taking MRIs of them while they were watching porn. And I kind of laughed at that because I was like, this is literally for TV right here, because there was no mention of that in the research study. Like, this is literally entertainment. Yeah.
Well, I think that what
I do like that they made a very big point. Like, that was like a tiny section of it, but they highlighted the fact yeah. that men who were on a vegan diet had a high increase in arousal versus non-vegan.
That's where
diets.
I thought it was agenda, because if you think yeah. about the whole argument for like if you're a macho man, you eat steaks, right. you do this.
Yeah.
I think what they were trying to say, and I remember one time, like they were saying that too much soy would make men's breasts grow or something like that, yeah. or some weird thing.
Which
and
is
that
not true. Yeah.
Lower, like too much soy lowered your testosterone or something like that. But no, I'm just saying, I don't think vegan or necessarily eating animal protein is going to make you more or less of a man. You know? Mm-hmm.
But absolutely.
They wanted to show you that yeah. it certainly doesn't.
Well, and then with the one woman that they were showing, she was plant-based, and they were saying she had like a 300% increase in arousal when she ate more plants. She even said that the porn she was watching first
right.
was a mailman and didn't do it for her. And then the second one, she found a good one. And I was like, oh, come on. This is not a controlled variable.
Yeah. That doesn't check out at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was good. Anyways,
better
hashtag
porn,
TV.
Yeah.
More arousal.
Yeah. Okay, so like I was saying, I felt like there wasn't a big exciting results thing here, mm-hmm. but will you talk us through what you thought about the results on the
Absolutely.
Vegan versus omnivore diet? Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, the results that came out of both the documentary, which they did share more in the documentary than they share in the research study, were two things that I 100% can back and 100% can get my arms around, right? So I think this was actually a very interesting study from a results perspective. Number one was, when we're eating more plants and less meat, we lower our LDL cholesterol, which is the truth, right? We know that. We know that if we eat less saturated fat from animals and we increase the amount of plants we're eating, we are going to improve heart health and decrease LDL. So they found that across the board. So it was like, okay, cool. But again, I was like, I felt like we already knew that. And then the second one was very interesting. So they didn't actually call this out in the research article, but I took screenshots of the results from the documentary. So the documentary only followed four of the sets of twins. So it looked at those four sets of twins. Three of the four people that went on a vegan diet lost significant muscle mass. So that was another big takeaway for me. It was like, if you are not careful when you switch to a vegan diet to increase, not only meet your protein needs, but increase them, because we need more protein on a vegan diet because we can't utilize it quite as efficiently as animal protein in recovering muscle, building muscle. So we saw, here I wrote it down, there was a set of twins that were very, very lean and very, very muscular. And the plant-based one was the only one who didn't lose muscle mass. He gained 2.3 pounds of lean mass, but his brother on the omnivore diet increased 7.1 pounds of lean mass. So they were like very young, very fit. So I thought that was interesting, right? He like more than tripled lean body mass on an omnivore diet. And then the other three actually lost lean body mass on the plant-based diet. So one of them lost 0.5 pound of muscle, somebody else lost 6.6 pounds of muscle, and somebody else lost 3 pounds of muscle. So again, it's just, we need to be really careful. If we do choose to go plant-based, or we are a vegan athlete, we just have to be very conscious of making sure that we're meeting our protein needs. And it can be done, right? This, you know, one of the twins showed us that it can be done. And, you know, we know from other research that it can be done. We just need to make sure we're being conscious of that protein piece.
But here's, I think, the problem with all of this is currently there's not, I don't feel like there's a convenient way to be vegan. You actually, like you're saying, you have to work at it. Like, you have to make sure you're getting that extra protein. You're going to have to understand how to basically get all your macros. So for someone like me who is like, I don't want to think, food is not my main concern, it's a side, I got to have it kind of thing. You fall into this trap of, okay, impossible meat, these different products that you can go to Trader Joe's or anything, and I see all these like not egg eggs. There's a lot of substitution for, like, okay, you're not going to eat meat. Well, here's the meat alternative, which for me, I like Megan. We're not eating as much meat these days, but we use like tofu. And yeah, it'll be seasoned like with taco seasoning or something. So still tastes kind of like the protein, but it's not like I'm trying to be like, oh, this is fooled you. This is hamburger meat, or fooled you. This is cheese.
Right.
And I think that the thing that wasn't talked about in there was, we know that processed foods and chemicals aren't necessarily good for our biome, aren't good for our system. And the more that we mess with stuff and we're not getting the raw ingredients, the more it seems to be harmful to our body. And anybody who's looked at the Impossible Burgers or anything like that, they're actually, I would say they're detrimental to your health.
So that's exactly kind of where I wanted to take this too. Like, if we're going on more, I hate the word whole food, but you guys know what I mean by that. Like the tofu, the tempeh, the seitan, you know, the wheat, vital gluten and that kind of stuff. Like if we're leaning on some of those more natural plant-based proteins, like that's very beneficial. But as Thomas was saying, if we're just subbing in meatless options, sometimes what we're doing is not necessarily getting less saturated fat, which that's the key to decreasing that LDL. It's the saturated fat piece. So didn't even know Thomas was going to bring this up, but I pulled the nutrition on a beef burger, like an 80-20, which is very typical beef burger,
yeah,
a Beyond Burger and an Impossible Burger. So they're all within like 40 calories of each other, right? So like pretty much the same, and for 4 ounces. And the beef burger does have 22 grams of fat, but the Beyond Burger and the Impossible have 18 and 14. But saturated fat is where I'm interested, right? So a beef burger, right, 4-ounce beef beef burger has 8 grams of saturated fat. A Beyond burger has 6 grams of saturated fat, and an Impossible burger has 8 grams of saturated fat. So like you're saying, wow. Thomas, like just like, oh, I'm not going to eat beef, but I'm going to eat Impossible meat or Beyond meat most days of the week instead, like that's not going to improve your LDL cholesterol, you know? So I would love to see like a better design study that looks at like a very classic vegan diet that is whole foods and those types of things versus some of these more processed versus a healthy omnivore diet that's watching saturated fat. I would love to kind of see what would happen heart health wise. And in my mind, I think both vegan and just watching saturated fat and reducing total meat intake and just being a little more diverse, but staying omnivore, I think we can see similar outcomes in most people, but we don't really have a study, you know, showing us that.
Yeah. And in the same way that I think that a meat diet benefits from that macho kind of like thing, the vegan diet benefits from people automatically thinking it's healthy. Mm-hmm. And you have... like one of my friends to me, I probably mentioned this before, he said potato chips are vegan. Mm-hmm. You know, you can eat a lot of stuff that is bad for you that is vegan. So just because it's vegan, just because you're going vegan doesn't necessarily mean you're eating healthy. It just means the absence of animal protein.
I can't get over that they're creating food in labs and like that's supposed to like I can't believe that that's a better option than having something that is naturally occurring in the universe.
Right,
we could print protein. Like,
well, that's what basically they were doing was bacon in the documentary.
Right,
they were creating fake bacon. I had the exact same thoughts as you, Meg. I'm like, really? Like, this, I guess in my mind, I'm like, if somebody, like we've said, the ethical vegan is a very different conversation. But if we're going vegan for the health benefits solely of it, I'm like, how is a processed bacon? Like, think about that. It's like a jar of bacon bits, basically. Those are processed bacon. Like, how is that so healthy for us? Like, I felt like they were pushing products a lot. And, you know, I'm just, I don't know that I can get my mind around that quite as much. But to get back to what you're saying, Thomas, like, margarine is vegan. Butter is obviously not, right? Like when people are like, it's vegan butter, I'm like, it's margarine. And we've already said like margarine is not that great anymore, you know? So I think that's just a good example of a lot of the, like, it's a vegan product, so it must be healthier, but it could be full of margarine and palm oils and things like that that are terrible for our heart.
And unfortunately, the marketers of this world are also going to catch on to that. And they put like stuff on bags that's like gluten-free. Well, yeah, your water in your smart bottle was always gluten-free.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
You know, oh, that's vegan now? Vegan water? Cool. Yeah. I want that.
Tortilla chips? Always been vegan. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do wonder, like, if you are purely, like, you don't want to hurt. There's microscopic animals and all like, bacteria and stuff on everything. So no matter what, you're still eating something, buddy.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, like, I think I posted on Instagram yesterday about how to get over 100 grams of protein as a vegan on a daily basis. Like, I'm super passionate. If somebody chooses to do that, whether it's ethical or health, like, I am happy to help people figure out how to make that work. You know, kudos to them. It's hard. It is hard, and it is a lot of food to meet our nutrition needs wholly as a vegan endurance athlete, right? As a vegan who's not really exercising their body much, it's probably significantly easier. But like to stay healthy.
I mean, but that's kind of appealing if you do like eating. Yeah,
that's true. That's true. So. I mean, I was also looking up, you know, anecdotally, I have just found that some of my vegan athletes that aren't super intentional about the protein piece end up injured more frequently. So I was looking up research on it, and there is some pretty good research to support, like, we really have to be careful about that protein piece just to make sure that we're recovering, right? Especially as we get older and we're eating more plant-based. But it can be done. Like, it can absolutely be done. It's just like, is that really what's right for each person? I don't think it needs to be black and white, either all plants or all meat.
That's where it comes down to, like, it's funny, like, it's the last time we talked about ketones or the ketone supplements, and Ben Johnson's sponsored by a ketone company, and he's using the ketones for calories and this and that. And people were like, look, Ben Johnson's doing it. He's fine. Ben's running the same times he ran before he started taking the ketone stuff. Ben Johnson will continue to run the same. Ben Johnson is a machine. Like, you could pour gasoline into Ben. Yeah, and the guy's going to be fine. You know, it really, I do feel like it is such an individual piece.
Let's give everyone a refresher on what ketone IQ is and why it's all of a sudden very relevant in the endurance world.
The exact question was, every professional runner is using ketone IQ. And by every, I think they picked up Des Linden this week.
Okay. Well, yeah, can I also see that? Can we also give a disclaimer that we were offered a sponsorship from ketone or product from ketone IQ, yeah, and we turned it down. And part of the reason we turned it down was when we get any nutritional stuff and we want to see if it's something that we want to support, like Element that we use for hydration or something like that, mm-hmm, which sponsors our other podcast, we go to Feathers and we say, hey, break this down for us. Is this something that actually benefits people or not? And you can go over it right now and tell us what your thoughts were and hook us up with that info.
Yeah. So the interesting thing about us all being very intertwined with Instagram is, like, I think we can very quickly see who has the marketing dollars, because all of a sudden everyone is seeing ads for something. So X Endurance,
Hot Shots?
It was for a while, Hotshot, you know, like, I know immediately who's spending their marketing dollars on Instagram because I get like 25 inbox questions on it. Right. So I say that because I want you all to be thinking about that when all of a sudden you get an ad for something or you see every influencer touting a certain supplement. Like, again, like Thomas said, it might not be harmful, right? But it, like, clearly they're throwing a lot of money at trying to get all of us to try these things. So take a step back and think about, like, is this something that's going to be beneficial for me? And then also the piece, like, is it harmful? If it's not harmful, cool. But is it beneficial? Do I want to try it anyways? Am I unsure? Like, does this look interesting? Like, those are things I want you guys thinking. But I truly believe that, you know, there's just a lot of marketing dollars behind Ketone IQ right now. So we're seeing it more. And they're sponsoring more people. You mentioned, you know, Ben Johnson has it. You know, I've seen a ton of people taking it. Now Des Linden is sponsored by him, Sarah Hall, Matt Choi. Yeah. So influencers, professional athletes. So all of a sudden we're like, oh my gosh, should I be doing this? I would be thinking the exact same thing. Because when we think about ketones, so we talk a ton on this podcast about what fuels our running. So it's carbs and it's fat. That's what fuels our running. Ketones is a third fuel source. So, it, you know, from any layman's terms, you're like, oh, well, I certainly need a third fuel source, right? Like, our carbs are a finite resource. We have to carb load and we still run out and I have to take gels. I have some fat, but that's a slower fuel source. So why wouldn't I add ketones? Because it's somewhere between, you know, carbs and fat as far as an energy source. So why wouldn't we want to try ketones, right? Like, it's another energy source for us. But when we take a look back, when we take a step back, right, and we're like, okay, so it is another energy source, but do we have proof that it's improving our performance? Because from my standpoint, it is costly. It is an expensive supplement, right? So it's like, in my perspective, I only want to do this if I know it's going to improve my performance. Right now, the research is not showing that it will indeed improve our performance. So that's kind of my hard stop on ketones at the moment. Could this change? Absolutely. But right now, when we look at the research studies, and I re-reviewed them just to make sure something didn't pop up since we talked about this last time, and there was one study that popped up in July of 2024, that's the most recent one, that was done on cyclists, and it actually found they had a decrease in performance. So they each cyclist either took it or didn't take it. So there's a placebo, so it tasted like the ketones, or they did take the ketones. So they separated those two performance things and they had a time trial for 20 minutes. Ketones are huge in the cycling world. That's why a lot of the research is coming out of there. And it found their power output across the board was 2.4% lower when they were using the ketones versus nothing.
So let's just talk about that for a second, because just from a financial perspective, mm-hmm, Ben did a thing where it was interesting because he used ketones during his marathon in Houston. Mm-hmm. How much is one bottle of ketone? Because I think he used like 8.
24 travel bottles is $108, but that's only if you subscribe. So let's say you don't subscribe. So it would be $5 a bottle.
$5 a bottle. Okay. So each bottle has 70 calories. Each Morton has how many?
100.
Okay. So one pack of Morton, which we all complain is too expensive, is right around $2. Let's just, for simple math, call it $2. Mm-hmm. You're going to take about 6 during marathon. You're going to have maybe one before. $14, right? These are 70 calories. How many of these bottles do you need?
There's zero carbs. This isn't going to work.
Yeah, like 70 calories. They're $5 a bottle. And I think people are taking, like, there's no guidance of, like, how do I use ketones, right? Like, there's no research, because the research is still, like, I don't know if these work, right? So the one research had people use 0.35 grams per kilogram of body weight. So I guess we could calculate that out and see how much someone would need to use. But from what I've seen, people are using, like, 3 or 4 bottles throughout a race. So that's, let's just say, $20. Yeah.
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 But they're not only using that as their fuel source, right? They're using that plus carbs.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Plus I don't the know. Gels I don't and know
if,
like that.
I don't know if Ben did gels and stuff. Addition.
He did. He did. Okay. He did. I saw his flat lay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, and you have to carry bottles. Can you imagine carrying bottles and gels? I don't know. I'm very intrigued by this. Well, I mean, like, little bottles that you're opening.
Oh,
like,
I think he putting those I think in your shorts. He dumped it into one handheld.
Oh, yeah, like a flask or something. I guess that's possible. Yeah.
Okay, so I guess my question is, what are they claiming happens and this helps and benefits runners because the research is not showing anything?
So in theory, when you think about ketones, it sounds amazing. Like, what, at least to me, like, I'm like, this sounds like it would be wonderful. So ketones are a great fuel source for our brain and for our muscles. And again, it's an additional fuel source above and beyond carbs and fat. So great. We've got some fuel for our brain. We've got some fuel for our muscles. They're also claiming that it's more efficient energy, that we can turn ketones into energy fast. Some people say faster than carbs. Some people say just a little less than carbs. So again, like, carbs are a fast fuel source. So that would be wonderful if ketones were like that. And then there is some research that maybe it would spare our glycogen. So we'd burn ketones and save some of those glycogen stores for later in the race, so we don't hit the wall. This is kind of theoretical of, like, how these ketones would be helping us. But when you really look at the research, it's not showing that we're sparing carbohydrates. It's not showing that it's improving performance. So in a lab, when we think about what ketones could do, it sounds very promising, but I am not sold on the actual real life usage of ketones in endurance athletes that we're really getting the benefit that we're hoping to get.
Again, you see something or people, influential people on Instagram touting something, and we don't really question the research. Like,
but here's the thing, like, there's a couple things you have to understand. So just to wrap that up, we did not end up doing a sponsorship with Ketone IQ. Additionally, you also have to look at the resource. Like, if I saw Feathers promoting a product, who is a licensed nutritionist, who's gone to school above and beyond for nutrition, and she says, hey, this is something that might benefit your running, that's a good person to maybe check. If it's, you know, people that are out there and just running around and they're on Instagram
accepting dollars to promote a product.
Two things too with this is, one is, I have to be honest, I haven't tried it, right? Sometimes the research lags behind and we don't really realize. So if I haven't tried it. So if somebody has tried it.
So you're saying Ben is right?
Megan, no, that's not what I'm saying. Oh. But I'm also saying, sorry, like, sometimes we do have to dive in and try something ourselves to see if it works. If you're a curious person, Ben's a very curious person. He's diving in to see if something works for him. Like, I'm cool with that. If it's safe, go ahead, try it, right? Like, that's fine with me. I just personally don't see enough of a encouragement to try it, right? Like, I walked right past their booth at TRE. I was like, I don't even want to try it. Maybe that's me being hard-headed, but I'm not even convinced it's worth my time and effort at this point. Maybe I will someday, but right now I just don't feel that way.
I guess here's the real question. Would some of the people that are promoting it use it if they were paying for it themselves?
So let's use Deslinden as an example. I love her, right? And I'm by no means trying to throw her under the bus. Like, she's not a dietitian. She doesn't have, like, a nutrition degree reputation that she needs to withhold. She's an athlete and looking for sponsorships, right? But do you remember when she was sponsored by the spray sodium and the spray carbohydrate?
Yeah, I forgot.
Why am I blanking on what that was called? I have a bottle of it because it was funny here. BOA. Do you remember when she was sponsored by BOA?
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't even opened it.
I remember that stuff.
I thought I was going to make a funny reel out of it. So she was... if enough money is thrown at somebody who needs, you know what I mean? Like it is what it is. Yeah. Like, and I'm not saying I wouldn't do the exact same thing if I was in her position, right? It's not her degree. It's not her business to be like, is this legit or not?
I mean, there are certain areas where I would do weird ads.
Right. Exactly. I would too. Like, and you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I get it. I zero judgment, you know, like we all have to make a living and we choose how to do it. It's just, yeah.
I did want to go back because I feel like we skipped from our study and documentary straight to ketones. So let's go back real quick to overall findings. And then I think there were a couple of questions, like vegan related questions that we wanted to talk through.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we talked a little bit about the study results, right? That, you know, they had significantly lower LDL. So when we look at the actual research study, so a research study is going to have parameters that make it quote unquote statistically significant. So you could say like so-and-so lost more weight than someone else, but if it's not statistically significant, it doesn't mean anything in the research world, right? So we kind of heard these one-off things in the documentary, but I wanted to see the research afterwards and find out like what did they truly find. So the primary outcome was that the people that were on a vegan diet's LDL cholesterol decreased on average down to 95. We want our LDL cholesterol under 100 for like total health is kind of the benchmark. And omnivores settled at 116. So, I mean, that's a clear difference, right? But again, like we said at the beginning, we know plant-based diets, less saturated fat is key to, you know, lowering that LDL. So that was the primary outcome. And then they had a couple secondary outcomes too. So they found that people on a vegan diet had decreased fasting insulin. So if we don't want our insulin levels like slowly creeping up over the years, we want to, you know, keep them, I don't want to say at a minimum because we want our insulin to match kind of our carbohydrate intake, but that was something that they found was helpful. And then another secondary outcome of the study was that vegans decreased their body weight. But my question with that is in the documentary, it really pulled out and there was no mention of the muscle loss in the actual study. So they were literally just looking at the change on the scale. So again, I think there's probably a lot more research in the background that didn't make the cut of this study. Maybe they're going to do something else with the rest of this research. Like Meg said, the microbiome, they took stool samples from all these people. They did like memory type things because a plant-based diet is supposedly going to decrease our risk of Parkinson's. So they were like trying to test a bunch of stuff, which then was just never mentioned. So I'm not exactly sure what happened there. So the outcomes of the study were lower LDL, decrease in fasting insulin, and decrease in body weight for vegan versus omnivore diet over 8 weeks. I should say the first 4 weeks, they were provided the food for their meals, but then they purchased the food for their snacks. And then for the final 4 weeks, they were educated by a dietitian of how to sustain either a vegan diet or a quote unquote healthier omnivore diet. So that was also kind of interesting because these people were a little bit more free living versus like captive in a lab. So it is a little more applicable to what it would happen if we were doing this in the real world, right? You know, versus other things. So that was kind of the takeaway, right, from the research study. And I think, you know, my overall thoughts with it is, you know, it doesn't have to be black and white like this. So if you're looking to improve your heart health, if you're looking to improve your LDL cholesterol, any way that we can decrease fat from animal products and increase plant products is amazing, right? So, you know, I don't want people to be scared into thinking they have to be vegan to be healthy. If we want to lean that way, Thomas just said Meg's making tofu tacos. You know, I have tons of vegan plant-based recipes on my website as well. Like I like the balance for somebody who's interested in that balance. If you're interested in going, you know, I almost said full bore vegan, which is that's really wrong to say, you know, full
bore. Going ham.
Going ham on vegan. So bad.
No cap.
You know, that's fine, right? But please, please, please make sure that we're paying attention to where we're getting protein and getting enough because we do need, on average, about 25 extra grams of protein a day on a vegan diet to create the same type of recovery. And we already have increased protein needs as endurance athletes. So we just need to be really conscious of that.
Speaking of, you mentioned Parkinson's and dementia stuff. I was talking to a nutritionist who actually runs with the Faster Bastards. And she was telling me that caffeine intake from coffee, specifically from coffee, between the antioxidants that are in the beans and the amount of caffeine combined together helps with Parkinson's and dementia. But the only problem was the amounts that she was talking about that I'd have to drink daily would send me my explode my head. Like, I wouldn't have Parkinson, but I also, my brain would be against the side of a wall.
I can't remember the ounces, but I do have a really funny story about when that research article came out. I was still working at the hospital, and there was three of us dietitians in our department in population health. And one of them was about 20 years older than me. And she read this research, and she had a family history of dementia. So I didn't know any of this was going on. For like 3 days in a row, she was bouncing off the walls. I was like, what is going on with Joyce? Like, Joyce, you need to chill. Like, she was real anxious and real high strung. And I was like, what's going on? And finally, she was like, Megan, I read this article that I need to start drinking caffeinated coffee, and I don't do well with caffeine. I was like, Joyce, we need to whoosh to come off the caffeine. So yes, that is a very valid research start.
I think it might have been 64 ounces. It was some,
maybe that's why she was losing her mind.
Yeah, it's some crazy amount that I was like, my eyball would literally shoot out of the side of my head.
Also, how'd they do that study?
I'll have to look up the amount. I don't remember that. Yeah.
It was sponsored by Starbucks.
Yeah. That does check out.
Okay, so the main, really, the only big concern with vegan, well, other than maybe going with a lot of processed foods when you think that you're doing a healthier thing, is the concern with the amount of protein.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, and this was a question that we got. We got somebody ask us, do you think going on a vegan diet makes us all healthier? And then another one was Rich Roll says that vegan living claims you don't, that vegan living, and he claims that we don't need as much protein as people say we need, right? So, you know, answering both of those questions kind of in one to, you know, what you said. So there's research to show that plant-based proteins are more deficient in leucine. Leucine is that is the amino acid that triggers our muscles to recover. So if we're not conscious of increasing the quantity, so we're not getting enough leucine, we have 30 to 40% lower recovery rates, like lower muscle protein synthesis, which is very significant. And then one study specifically found, like I was saying before, we need like 20 to 25 extra grams of protein. So like 7 to 8 grams per meal more than we would need on a omnivorous diet. So I disagree with the fact that we don't need as much protein as whatever Rich is saying.
Sorry, Rich, which is unfortunate because he's an endurance athlete. You'd think that he would understand we need more protein, but whatever.
Need to find what works for each of us individually, right? Take the science, take the recommendations, take sponsored ads with a grain of salt, and put together, try. Like I always say, we're our own best guinea pigs. Give it a try. If you want to try ketones, try it. See if it works. But be honest with yourself. Is it working? Or did you have a new pair of shoes on that day too? You know what I mean? Like, well, think about those variables.
I also feel like Meg and I tried something that I don't know that there was a benefit. And maybe I need to go try it again because we have like 10 bottles of it at the house. But the nitric oxide, like, where did you find that? We went to the feed and we purchased that and we were both using it. Did you feel like you got a benefit from it?
I don't know. I felt like sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. And then I kind of was like, there's nothing drastically changing that makes me feel like I should continue with this. So we didn't. But again, like I think I asked you and there was like, there's nothing really harmful that could happen from trying it. So let's try it and see what happens.
And it's expensive.
And that's it.
Yeah. Right. And it was expensive and you weren't sure. So you stopped it. You know, like I support that kind of experimentation.
Yeah. Okay. Do we want to try and do these rapid fire questions?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Go.
Okay. Thoughts on meal prep, meal delivery services?
I think it's a fine idea, but most of them are deficient in carbs. So you'll probably need to supplement them with carbs.
Okay. High LDL and ApoB. MD told me to cut the carbs.
Oof. It's not the carbs. Cut saturated fat and increase soluble fiber.
Okay. Creatine monohydrate for recovery. What is that?
Creatine? Yeah. Oh. They're just using the full term of it. Yeah. So creatine, chronic creatine supplementation has been shown to speed recovery for short bursts of intense exercise. But just taking creatine after a work, certain workouts to try to recover is probably not the strategy, right? It would be continuously supplementing with creatine, and it's more so been shown for those short burst intense activities.
Okay, runners giving up simple sugars for the new year.
I hate this one. Yeah, I hate this one. If we, I mean, just make sure we're fueling our runs. Don't give up your gels, please. That's my biggest thing.
Okay, running during perimenopause, increasing cortisol and weight gain.
There's lots of people out there that like to hate on running and saying that it's too stressful for our body when our body is going through these changes. I clearly do not agree with this. I think it's also a stress reliever for a lot of people. I think it helps with sleep for a lot of people in this perimenopausal stage. So if running is supporting your overall healthy lifestyle, I don't think you need to change it.
Okay, AG1, how nutritious is it compared to what people think?
Nothing tops fruits and vegetables. So if we're really taking a focus here, let's try to eat more of those.
Okay, a bad habit. Eating right before bed, then skipping breakfast. Does this impact sleep and performance the next day?
Yes.
So stop doing that?
Yes, or it does. Do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll screw up with your sleep, right? Because if you're eating right before bed, digestion like impacts our quality of sleep. And then if you're waking up full and not eating and then running and then not recovering, yeah, that's not a great habit to be in.
Okay. Do I need to do a full-on carb load before a long run or half marathon?
Nope. So we don't have to. If we want to practice like a one day before either of those, great. But we don't have to do a full.
Food lies. Red lentil pasta spiking blood glucose more than lentils.
This one made me laugh. I'm like, what? Really? We're concerned that a red lentil pasta is spiking our blood sugar. Like, these red lentil pastas are literally made just of red lentils. Do they maybe increase our blood sugar more than like the whole lentil? Maybe, right? They're a little more processed, but we're still getting so many great benefits. Red lentils are crazy high in soluble fiber. So if we're trying to decrease our LDL, I don't care if you eat them in a soup. I don't care if you eat them in a bowl. I don't care if you eat them as pasta, right? We don't need to be demonizing lentils. This. You need some. You know I love red lentil pasta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hook me up.
Okay. this one's funny. Every email from Matt at the feed.
I'm like, I don't know if we even want to dig into this one.
Yeah, I get those too. I just hit delete.
I do too.
Okay. I
do too.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Does too much protein turn into fat? Can you eat too much protein?
You can.
It's unlikely. I think
it turns into BO.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, we've heard that. Get a little stinky. Yeah, I mean, anything in excess can turn into excess fat, but it's a lot harder for us to turn excess protein into fat. It's a lot easier to turn excess fat and carbs. But in the end, if we're over consuming for too long, it could be turned into fat.
The Yucca app? I've never heard of this.
Yeah, I had to look this up. So it's a mobile app that scans food products to get clear information on the health impact of the products you consume. I was like, oh, geez. So literally you're going to scan something. It's going to tell you if it's okay for you or not. Like there's way too many variables to know if this is okay or not. So scam is my thought. Yeah.
Okay. Skip the Yucca app.
Whew. Yeah.
Okay. And our final rapid fire here. Electrolytes are a scam and we just need to salt our food.
I've actually heard that one. I'm like, who is even spreading this stuff? Like, you guys have heard me say it before. We need to recoup our sodium losses. If that's an electrolyte drink, if that's salting our food, we have options, but it's not necessarily a scam, right? Like, a lot of us need those electrolyte drinks to help us out too.
What about magnesium, the different forms of electrolytes?
You know, that. So the different forms of magnesium, that's something I haven't gone down that rabbit hole either. I keep saying I'm going to, but clearly it's not high enough on my priority list to do it. But yeah, there's a lot about that as well.
All right. I think we just packed in a lot of info right there. So hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode.
Peas
if you
and carrots?
Watched the Netflix documentary.
Peas and carrots?
Are you just going to keep saying it?
Oh, yeah. No, go. Keep going.
If you watch the Netflix documentary, hopefully this helped you translate, I guess, some of it or maybe have some additional thoughts on it. Mm-hmm. On that note, I have nothing else to say.
See, don't you wish I just stopped with peas and carrots? Yeah. Peas and carrots.
Bye.
Bye. Can you hear that?
I did now that you mentioned it, but I was like, what are you guys talking about?
Came to me and was like, Thomas, we really want you to tell runners Coca-Cola is good for you. Here's the size of the check. I'd be like, this is the best drink you could possibly have during a marathon.
And
maybe write in what your favorite porn to watch is to get your blood flow going.
Apparently, you know, it wasn't the mailman for her. I don't know.